And that sound means it's the start of another missile for the masses. This is the 64th Chaplains This Is Motor Pod, and I am your host, Gary. And this is the podcast where I talk about what's going on in my life of collecting. I will be talking about reviewing vehicles, play sets, or even trailers from the G.I. Joe, a real American hero toy line from 1982 to the present day, but mainly focusing on the vintage era of G.I. Joe, 1982 to 1994. And also, I will review G.I. Joe comic books. And this, the 64th missile, is my part three of three, catching up on comic book reviews because I fell behind. And in between recording the second part two, this is now part three, and I'm going to be reviewing three issues of G.I. Joe, a real American hero, issues 303, 304, and what came out last week, issue 305. So this will be packed with reviews. It's going to be packed with spoilers. So if you don't want to be spoiled, you know, listen back in when you've read the books, or you're going to hear a plot synopsis. So if you want to stay current and you don't worry about spoiled and you want to hear my thoughts on the issues, stick around. We're going to be talking all about that. But first, it's been a little bit over a week since my last recording, so I'll just say what's going on in my life of collecting is really not much. Other than two missiles ago, I mentioned about buying some Dinobots at the Manchester Toy Show, and they were an impulse purchase. And I was looking at the Grimlock I got from the Manchester Toy Show, and it looked rougher in certain areas, but nicer in other areas. Mainly the chrome was peeling and stuff. And it was stuff that I really didn't, you know, I looked at it in the show. It wasn't, you know, the greatest light. And, you know, the big thing was I didn't want to have a cracked foot like my Grimlock in display has. So I was like, oh, well, let me take a look. Maybe, you know, the old Transformers can be mixed and matched with parts like G.I. Joe's. So I'm like, can I make a Franken Transformer out of this? You know, Wheeljack's repairs, right? And come to find out, I opened up the Grimlock from the show and it had a blue waist. And I'm like, wait a second, that's supposed to be red. Or is this Mandela effect? But sure enough, go online, do some research, join a Transformers ID Facebook group. And I bought a knockoff Grimlock at non-knockoff pricing. The good news was the weapons were not knockoff. So my Grimlock is now only a sword away from being complete and a broken heel. But the flip side was the piece that was broken, I couldn't switch out because that piece of plastic held in by two screws has a Takara Maker's Mark on it. So I couldn't do any switching because the knockoff doesn't have that. So at time of this recording, I just sold it on eBay. I got half my money back. So a little bit of a loss. Shame on me. I know more about Transformers now. But I'm happy that it wasn't a complete loss for the buy. I did double check the other two Dinobots, Slag and Sludge, and they're OG, they're real Takara Hasbro Transformers. No worries there.
Now back to G.I. Joe.
Now, one other thing before the comic books. So I went to this Toy Life in Hamden, Connecticut. It's essentially just, you know, a 15-minute drive from my house, and went there for a Beyblade tournament where my son competed. He was really excited. It was his first little Beyblade tournament, and he did well. He got into the second round before he got knocked out. And after we were done and the tournament was over, we were getting ready to take off. And I was like, do you want to buy some more Beyblades? You know, they're relatively inexpensive when you build them yourself at the store. So he was going through the pieces and I was walking around. He doesn't have a lot of vintage Joes. He's basically sold through the collections he's purchased. He's waiting for, you know, the next round of estate sales or whatever for them to walk into his store. But he had on the pegs a couple figures and, you know, a lot of moderns, but there were two O-rings. There was a Skymate with no visor and no boomerang and no bow. And I wasn't really looking for that because I just recently completed my Skymate. But he did have for $4 a Sea Slug. And $4 for a G.I. Joe figure, I didn't think that was asking the moon. Plus, you know, I was there for an hour and a half, so you might as well get a little money out of me. So a $4 Sea Slug, not a beater, added to my collection. He had some other stuff there, a whale, some convention stuff, you know, the old Snake set, Marissa Fairborn set. And just was, I asked him how much he was getting for a Trouble Bubble. That was a little bit out of my price range. It was higher than eBay pricing, so I just said thanks, but no thanks today. Other than that, it was a pretty good day. Good Sea Slug that will probably replace one of my beater ones that are laying in my my driver's box that I still have to go through. Pretty cool. Fun to add something to the collection and, you know, to support a local business. And now the meat and potatoes of tonight's missile for the masses. It is G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, issues 303, 304, and 305. Each issue has been scripted by writer Larry Hama, illustrated by artist Chris Mooneyham, colored by Francesco Sagala. Sabrina Del Grosso was the flatter. That is her credit in the book. So that might be the textures and stuff inside the coloring. And then finally, Pat Brousseau as letterer. And we also have Diana Davis as research specialist. And editor Alex Antone with publication design by Jillian Crabb. So each one of these, we're going to be going through them one by one. And we're going to start off with the covers. And we're going to look at basically the cover A of each issue. By Andy Kubert and Brad Anderson. And we're also going to be looking at the 1 in 10 retailer incentive variants that are also connecting by Brad Walker and Francesco Sagala. So, issue 303, let's dive in. So, issue 303, cover A, is Serpentor Khan, you know, with his left fist into the air, his right fist gripping onto his cape. He is mutated. The snakes on each cowl are alive and well. He's screaming into, looking upward. The camera's below the waist, you know, upwards. He's screaming. He's inciting. He is exclaiming. There's a lot of energy in this image of him. He is in front of flames of fire. So he could be inspiring a battle. He could be, you know, in a throne room, riling the troops. It is a very powerful image of the great Serpentor Khan. I'm going to say his belt buckle is, you know, a snake's head. And it's funny the way it's drawn. That is the almost like the focal point of the image. So that snake's eyes follow you wherever you move your head in relation to the cover. It's very clever. The other images, too, of his left eye is glowing. Serpentor Khan's left eye is glowing. And his long hair is coming out from underneath his cowl. It is a really powerful image. And this would be something that if this was made available, like in a print or something, or if these were, you know, dollar bin books, you know, this would be an image that, you know, you could put on your wall. If you're a real Serpentor fan, if you're a Serpentor Khan fan, it is a cool image, and I think it's a really powerful cover of who the current major villain in the real American Hero storyline is. So really good cover there. And then cover B, of course, is the black and white inked artwork. And then finally, we get to the connecting cover, and it's Scarlet firing her crossbow. She's diving to the ground, and in the background, she's in flames, but in the background over the night sky, you see an image of Dr. Mindbender. It is regular Dr. Mindbender. It's not mutated Dr. Mindbender. It is, it's a nice image. It stands well on its own, but again, it's part of a connecting cover. So it is, it's a good piece of that puzzle. And if I had my druthers, if I was only able to purchase one cover of this book, it definitely would be cover A, only because, I don't know, it's just, it's speaking more to me with that powerful Serpentor Khan image. Now, to summarize the plot, G.I. Joe 303 begins at the pit with Dial Tone, Mainframe, Stalker, and Duke monitoring a Revanche helicopter approaching the mutant zombie virus bomb infected Cobra Island. What follows is Alpha 001 landing and approaching Serpentor Khan with an idea that would be, in quotes, mutually beneficial. This is where, in my experience, usually the person that suggests the idea is getting a larger slice of the mutual beneficial side of the agreement. Well, Mindbender warns Serpentor that AI entities don't think like humans. And while Serpentor Khan says that humans were the templates, Mindbender counters like the dinosaurs were the templates for the birds. Alpha 001 shows his surgical bot that upgraded three blue ninjas, and the blue ninjas are faced with an upgraded bat. The bat is handily, pun intended, defeated, and Serpentor asks for a Viper volunteer to enter the surgical bot. The last thing we see is the Viper's face through the window, appearing to scream out, but silenced by that liquid inside and the bings of the bot. We get a page of Duke talking to Spirit in Utah. This serves as kind of a catch-up for the reader. Serpentor is going to invade Springfield, but that doesn't mean that the pit isn't a target either. The book flash forwards a week, and the first scene is Dawn is visiting her parents in Springfield. She arrives there, and she's setting the stage with a loving embrace of the parents, and they ask if she's staying, and she's like, well, yeah, but are you going to turn me in? And they're like, no, we're not going to turn you in. So that is setting the stage for future storytelling there. Then we're back to the pit in Utah, where Revanche upgraded Techno, Toxo, and a regular Viper are trying to infiltrate Camp Greer, also known as the pit. They talk about their upgrades, but with the cameras hidden in the cacti, Spirit already has eyes on them. Lady J also explains their upgrades, and Duke lays out their plan of the Joes, not giving away what they already know. We go back to Cobra Island, and Mindbender informs Serpentor of more enhanced blue ninjas in the High Sierras. At this point, that should clue the reader that these guys are after Snake Eyes. Mindbender warns that the weather and location is not ideal, and the ninjas will essentially be incommunicado with Cobra Island. We go into the cabin, and Timber the Fourth thinks he's waking Snake Eyes and Scarlet in their cabin, but they're prepared for when the blue ninjas bust in. They must be light sleepers. They have egressed into the rafters, giving themselves the high ground. What follows is a well-choreographed fight with a zinger by Snake Eyes. Anybody used to him talking yet? When Chekhov's kamikaze mode activates, we cut to later where Serpentarchon and Alpha 001 wonder about the Sierra's mission outcome. Mindbender talks about solar flares also hindering transmissions, where you get a silent still of Snake Eyes, Scarlet, and Timber laying with what looks like blood all over their bodies. After seeing this, Serpentor orders more blue ninjas. And this concludes issue 303. Some thoughts. I think Larry Hama tended to a little over-explain some details in this book. I think we didn't need so many words. I think some scenes could have been shortened and the plot moved along. He also jumped around a lot. He's setting up a three-pronged story, a story with three fronts, a battle between all these, you know, adversaries or parties. And he's really trying to make sure that people understand who is where and what is going on. And it's busy, and it's not confusing, but it almost seems a little over complex and, like I said earlier, a little over explained. Doesn't mean that it's a bad issue. I did enjoy it, but these are things that, talking critically about the book, you know, I have to mention. So a couple things that I liked, you know, the yos. I like seeing Spirit, but the thing I didn't like is the fact that he's basically the guard of the pit. And about 25 issues ago, we had a really good one-off issue with Law and Order. And regular readers know that Larry Hama likes he likes certain characters and they have certain roles to fill. As, you know, a toy collector, a G.I. Joe collector, and also a comic reader, you know, I know the G.I. Joe team has a vast roster of characters. And I'm not faulting him for using Spirit in that way, but I am going to say that I would have liked to see a little more, you know, variety in the troopers. The good news is it's really limited to this issue. When I talk about the other issues, you'll see very easily why one character gets me really excited. So another thing I noticed was when Dawn visited her parents in Springfield, she had this look on her face in the final panel when she said she knows her parents won't turn her in. And her facial expression was very serious in that moment. Her parents are in loving embrace with her. She's in the middle. And she looks up. In the gaze in the eyes was serious in tone. And this one, she looked mean and devious while her parents are overcome with warm, loving emotion. I didn't know if Dawn at that point, you know, we still know that we should remember that Dawn still has Snake Eyes' memories and stuff still jumbled in her brain from way back when, you know, in the 230s. So when she got into the brainwave scanner. So is that when, you know, Snake Eyes' psyche was taking over, or was she not in the moment there, or does she have another reason for being in Springfield? And of course, we're going to find the answer to that question in the next issue. And then the last thing I liked, the last yo, was I really like the new blue ninja design. It looks like something out of the middle years. It's not classified inspired. And because we're drawing from those middle years, that is a huge yo for me. That is like, that makes me excited. I like it when we get more breadth of characters from the entire Real American toy line from the last 42 years. So that brings us to G.I. Joe 304 and a little cover description going over Andy Kubert's and Brad Anderson's cover of Dawn Moreno high above, like she's on top of a hiss tank. You know, the turret is right to her back, and she has cross swords over her head, and she's looking down on a night creeper, a night viper, and an alley viper, like she's ready to pounce and attack. It is a good image. It's, you know, striking. You wonder what Dawn is doing. Arashikage's symbol on her chest is elongated, so the dots are more like squares, and the dashes are, you know, truncated in width. It isn't like a wide rectangle, it's like a narrow rectangle going up her chest. You know, it's a solid cover. The colors are very, like, animated, like, you know, they're bright and very toyetic. And the only complaint I have of this cover is, why don't we have a Dawn Moreno figure yet? Super 7, please. Or Hasbro, come on, classified. I'll buy it. And then we get to the connecting cover variant, the 1 in 10 variant. And we have Destro in the background. He's grimacing. He's got his fists up, you know, like ready to punch like a boxer or something. Or he's just like, you know, he's really mean. Like, you know, he's like, grr. And then in the foreground, we have Duke, you know, firing a pistol in his right hand while he holds an XLMR rifle in his left. With poor trigger discipline, pointing to the sky. But, you know, he's in the middle of the battle, so that works. It is, I will say, Destro. I'm really happy with the Destro. I think Destro really looks menacing and mean and evil. But the Duke's posture and his facial expression, you know, he's got a scrunched up face, almost like small face things. And, you know, he looks like he's backing away from the battle, like he's maneuvering, you know, retreating from his current position. So it doesn't look strong. In this image, it looks like Destro has the upper hand and Duke's like weaker in the foreground. So with that, I'm going to say it's good. I'm not going to say it's great. I liked the Scarlet Mindbender cover better. But again, I'm going to have to go with cover A on this one. It's a good image. It's not as, I would say, like iconic or striking as the Serpentor Khan cover, but it is something that we will find that suits the issue very well, which I like a cover that does that. If the cover isn't going to be like something that's like really super grabs me, like the previous cover did. So cover A takes the win for me on this one as well. Plot breakdown. The first page of 304 is essentially the last page of 303. Great for us floppy readers, not so much for the trade waiters. Page 2 brings us to the Sierras, and we find Timber is not so dead, as he's licking the tomato sauce. That's right, Snake Eyes and Scarlet staged that photo that reached Serpentor Khan. Lift Ticket and Wild Bill set down the tomahawk near the cabin, and Black Hat, Mainframe, and My Boy Airtight exit to gather the remains of the Blue Ninjas. Snake Eyes opens his footlocker, exposing his visored uniform, 1985 version 2, to get dressed based on Scarlet's suggestion. We go to Springfield, where Dawn slips out of her parents' home to do reconnaissance of the town. She notes maggots lined up for defense. As she's walking, she comes across three more enhanced mutants in the guise of a Night Creeper, Alley Viper, and Night Viper, and reasons that Serpentor Khan has sent them for his own reconnaissance of Springfield. She radios Camp Greer, also known as the Pit, about what's going on, and we get a discussion again, reminding the reader of recent plot developments. This is interrupted by the Pit sensors alerting them to the presence of a Viper, Techno Viper, and Toxo Viper infiltrating the fenced perimeter. Mooneyham's illustrations show two Vipers and a Blue Ninja. I'm not even going to no-prize this because Spirit does say, but it's not a positive ID. They allow the Vipers to approach the Quonset huts, which appeared empty to them, to Spirit's amusement. Back to Cobra Island, where Alpha 001, Serpentricon, and Mindbender discuss plans for converting the casino to a mutant augmenting assembly line. They get an update from the Camp Greer Vipers, which is nothing concrete to Serpentricon, even though Cobra has been to the pit several times and even infiltrated it and in the 130 issues, you know, issues 130 to 132. You know, they were there, they were inside. So we change over to a live stream from Springfield of the rally Cobra Commander is holding to prepare for the forthcoming invasion. We get an image of the commander in riding pants, a very German World War II inspired field jacket, a high collared shirt underneath, something that I would say like the German SS would have, and a balaclava with the Cobra sigil on his forehead, with the very bottom tails of the sigil going down to the bridge of his nose. This balaclava has two eyelets, or eye openings, rather than a singular eye opening like the balaclava that Beachhead would wear. It's a very clean look. I like that it makes sense that his helmet would fit directly over it. You know, this gets away from that hooded Cobra Commander versus helmeted Cobra Commander discussion. So we go back. The Tomahawk is on its way back to the pit when one of the blue ninjas reanimates. With its cables and hoses working like tentacles, it takes the entire team to eject it from the helicopter, with Black Hat essentially having to tackle it and jump out of the helo, but thankfully, Airtight nabs her back to safety, but a second one is ready to pounce when Wild Bill shoots it right in the head. Back in Springfield, Dawn makes her move against her mutated trio and quickly overpowers them. They reach the conclusion that they cannot beat her, and they self-destruct. Dawn, over her comm to Duke, says she thinks she found their fatal flaw. We get to the final page. We conclude with Zartan approaching Destro and the Baroness. The conversation leads that they are currently at odds, but there may be a common benefit with what's going on in Cobra Island, Springfield, and the Pit. So, observations and what's going on in this issue. One thing to note, again, going back to the Marvel era, for my on this note, is we're going through lengths again to obscure Snake Eyes' face. You know, we got a bunch of it at the end of the Marvel run. It shouldn't be an issue at this point. The genie was already let out of the bottle 30 years ago. Just saying. Another thing was if the Larry Hama run, again, you know, is the only one I'm kind of sort of reading the previews on. And I'm starting to shy away from this because this is what I'm going to say. The cliffhanger from issue 303 was spoiled in the previews of 304, much like the cliffhanger from 300 was spoiled in the 5-page preview of 301. I'm not a huge fan of that. Larry likes, you know, Larry's writing the way he's always written. You know, his audience has stayed the same and his style has stayed the same. He writes, you know, very good. I've needed the dictionary a few times, now known as Google, for a couple things while doing these reviews. But one thing that Skybound did when I was a regular reader of The Walking Dead was there would be a 3-page preview and there would be 3 random pages from within the issue. They didn't spoil a darn thing. If anything, they only raised more questions. That was Kirkman's style. That was the editorial style the editorial direction at that time. And I like that. And if anybody's listening, you know, from Skybound, please just go back to doing that. It was good. I don't like getting spoiled in 5-page previews as a regular reader. It doesn't stop me from racing to the comic shop and buying these and then reading them that night and then, you know, 4 days later podcasting about it. But But, you know, it would just be nice if it wasn't spoiled, you know, the week before when I'm, like, getting all excited to buy G.I. Joe comic books. That's all I'm saying there. The other thing is, too, we're getting a little more of Snake Eyes speaking. These are very short sentences. You know, he's really quiet. You know, this reminds me of Deep Six in the Marvel run and also Hardtop. You know, typically quiet characters. But, you know, I joked around with my friend Kirk on Twitter, X. You know, Snake Eyes is quite loquacious these days. No, he's not. He's still that quiet guy that was set up in, you know, in the IDW run when they were talking about in the LRRP days. You know, Storm Shadow was the only one that really could get him to talk a little bit, but he was kind of quiet around the rest of his teammates. So they're keeping a characterization of Snake Eyes consistent. I really hope that we don't need to go through another, you know, face disfigurement, vocal cord severing thing. You know, we got that with Throwdown. I'm actually happy that Hama hasn't retread those steps. Sometimes Hama has a comfortable cycle, but I really like with what he's doing there. It's good for me. And then the other thing, too, I noticed was Mooneyham's Dawn is a little more armored up. So contrary to the cover, where Dawn's armor is very similar to what Larry designed when Dawn came out in, you know, the issue 246, 245, you know, it's very similar on the cover. But inside the book, Dawn is a little more armored up. You know, the Arashikage branding is larger on her breastplate. So it's similar, but it's just a little more bulkier. It looks a little more durable for taking fire, taking sword slices and stuff like that. And her arms are still bare, so she still has movement and stuff for being a ninja. Another thing I noticed was it looks like the power set of the mutant vipers is fluctuating. They were much more determined against Snake Eyes and Scarlet, you know, the blue ninjas, and versus when they're going up against Dawn. You know, the power set isn't being consistent. That's just something I'm not sure if that's going on with all this, the mutants and the augmentation. So we got a little bit of an inconsistency there. It doesn't really hinder the story too much, but I did notice it. And then finally, in the helicopter, I think it's Airtight that says the word Sisyphean and, you know, regards to the blue ninjas. And I had to look it up. And I'm just going to explain it as denoting or relating to a task that can never be completed. And I mentioned that because that's bad news for anybody that's not a blue ninja fan, because that means they're probably going to be around for quite a while. So it looks like there are new antagonists for the G.I. Joe team, and it's somebody else for Hama to bounce them off of, aside from using Cobra or Mars or the Dreadnoks all the time. Although right now, Mars, in the recent past, we haven't seen him much other than, you know, this last page. They have always been their own thing. They haven't really done too much against G.I. Joe lately, much like the Dreadnoks. Everybody kind of aligns up. They're like begrudging allies. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's the kind of relationship they've had there. So it's good to have another, you know, black hat villain for the G.I. Joe team. So overall, another good book. I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it actually more than the previous issue. You know, the action was spread out across other areas. There was more action, a little less exposition, and my boy Airtight. That brings us to the final issue of this Missiles review, and that is G.I. Joe 305. And cover A is Cobra Commander walking down Springfield, leading his Vipers down, essentially, I'd say, Main Street. You got the Welcome to Springfield, a nice little town to Cobra Commander's left. He's facing us. And to the right, you got mailboxes and houses. He's got his helmet on. He's got his cape flowing in the wind. The camera's low, almost like ankle level, and it's shot up. He's looking into the camera, and he's got his staff in his left hand held out, and, you know, his right fist is clenched. You know, again, he's walking, but it's near his right hip holster for his pistol. He looks very much like his version one figure with a modern update of the helmet and the addition of the cape. You know, on his left, you have a Televiper. On his right, you have a Techno Viper. And then in the background, you got more Vipers, more Televipers, you know, filling out the scene. It's a very nice book. This is another one of those images that is something that is striking. It is something that would be something that I would want to be more inclined to put on my wall or display. The 1 in 10 incentive cover is Dawn firing a pistol behind her as she's running. Again, it's like the Duke. She's running away from something. She's grimacing and she's leaning down. And then in the background, you have the Baroness holding her rifle. And she's looking into the center of the book. So again, you know, you got two characters that are kind of following you where you look. It's actually of the three incentive covers, this is actually my favorite of the two. It's my favorite of the three. It's not really Cheesecake, but it is two powerful women on the cover. I like it. Again, I do enjoy Andy Kubert's art. And just because it's more reflective of what's going on inside the book and the fact that it is also a really good image, this cover, the 305 cover A, is my favorite of all six of the covers I've talked about today. So with the covers, finally, all the covers out of the way, now talk about the plot of issue 305. The first page is a splash page with Cobra Commander on top of the community center where the rally was being held. He has a team with him comprised of troopers, vipers, a techno viper, and a televiper. The techno viper is analyzing the remains of the three mutant cyborgs that were spying on the rally and reporting to the commander. From a bit of clues from what the Cobras gathered, Cobra Commander deduces that Serpentor Khan and Mindbender are spying on him. The Televiper postulates that a third party caused their self-destruction, and Cobra Commander assumes that, in this is quoting the book, in all probability, that person is still in Springfield. We go to the attic in the Moreno's house where Dawn is reporting to Duke the events of the previous issue. Dawn informs him about the logic chip that negates self-preservation. Perhaps this is the weakness she was talking about in the previous issue. She stops when she notices Fred 23, Crimson Guardsman, approaching the door. The CG tells her father that something went down that had the earmarks of Dawn. The Morenos led him inside, where after they find out that Fred 23 figured this out on his own and hasn't informed anyone else, they sucker punch him and knock him out to protect Dawn and give her time to escape Springfield. We go back to the pit and the Blue Ninja's cyborg is laid out like the robot in issue number 3, when the hand comes alive. A quick note, they didn't learn their lesson way back in issue number 3. Also, they didn't learn their lesson in the previous issue. Anyway, Black Hat again is the target of this hand. She's being choked. She frees herself, throwing it where Stalker shoots it with his pistol. He tells them, if it happens again, to keep chucking the parts downrange for him. Just step out of the line of fire. We then go back to under the Quonset hut, where Spirit Lady J and Molto are ready to start taking out the Vipers and the Blue Ninja. One of the Vipers has a nerve gas grenade with a pin pulled. He gets abducted by the Joes, who sneak up behind him through a hatchway in the floor, hidden underneath the Navajo blanket. What follows is a fight where Molto cuts the Blue Ninja's head in half with his knife, and the Viper with the nerve gas grenade ends up shot in the head by Lady J, and Molto cuts the hand off that Viper to be able to put the pin back inside the grenade to resecure the spoon. Apparently, this is all going to plan according to Serpentor Khan. So he thinks he's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. But there's a final front of Serpentor Khan's war, a plant inside a revenge facility in Baton Rouge. There, a Python officer is overseeing the augmentation of the mutated casino guests. He's approached by a Blue Ninja about a mod chip being installed. The officer takes him into a storeroom, which is a trap. It's shielded, and the Blue Ninja cannot contact the Hive Mind as he's attacked by the officer. The ninja manages to slice off the officer's arm, but his arm forms tentacles and defeats the ninja. I like that because it's very similar to the zombie Vipers from the 50th anniversary line. Love this nod to the 4-inch figures. Back to the chip. The chip nullifies any revenge control of any augmented mutants that are being, helped out by revenge. We end up finally back at Destro's castle, where Destro, Baroness, and Zartan toast their new alliance. In Scottish Gaelic, Destro says, "Slánte maith sasanach," which translated is good health. Cheers. Zartan says, "Pardon?" And the next panel, Testro's Pasha tells me he isn't buying Zartan at this moment. And Baroness explaining the toast leads me to believe that she isn't either. But that's lost on Serpentor and Mindbender as they watch through the eyes of the Zartan simulacrum. So what's going on with the real Zartan? Mindbender is hunting him down with a biometric missile. And that's the last issue. The notes on this one for A Thing Alike, the CG telling Dawn's father about the earmarks of Dawn. Was this a bluff? Could it be any other ninja? I really like the way that scene reads. Is the CG bluffing his way in, trying to curry favor, or did he actually figure it out? And he's taking a leap. There's many ways for this to, we don't need an explanation, but I really like the way the art and the writing was for that scene. It was really smart. Another great character moment, another yo. Dawn's father. "We can't kill him. He's our neighbor." Another thing that could be read in different ways, is he not trying to arise suspicion? Is he his neighbor? It's the guy's like, "Hey, Fred, hey, Mr. Moreno, I have a plumbing problem." "Oh yeah, no problem. I'll help you out." You got that neighbor. Is it a neighborly thing, or is it just because, again, there's layers to that that don't need to be explained, but you can postulate, you can have a discussion about it. I enjoy that. So here's a no. And this is really something for all three issues. There's been some clumsy dialogue, and I really don't want to blame Larry Hama for that, because he's seems to be usually rather worldly with his words, and he has a depth of vocabulary that is very broad. And the thing that jumped out at me was Nina. Or Nina, it's Nina, N-E-N-A versus Nina, N-I-N with a tilde A, much like the tomato meatball sauce in issue 303 or 304, there's just some clunky dialogue that I think was, mistranslated between Hama and the letterer. I don't know how that got past editorial, like I said, my Spanish isn't that great, but I know what niña is in versus Nina. Nina is a name. Niña is daughter. That was one thing. And then another no, and I'm not going to blame Pat Rousseau for this. The threat level has jumped the shark. Who talks like that? Come on, Spirit. I don't think that would be anywhere in anybody's vocabulary. That was a clunky line. And then I looked up acetylcholinesterase blockers. So for the nerve grenade, I looked it up, and basically it's just an inhibitor for, you know, the neurons in the brain. So they can be reversible, irreversible, or quasi-irreversible, or pseudo-irreversible. So basically, you know, that nerve gas was dangerous. It just stops, it blocks enzymes in the brain, and, you know, it turns it into chlorine and acetate. So that could be very deadly and, you know, very, very dangerous. So I did look that up. You know, so it's a real thing. And then two more things that I like to end on a high note. I really thought that the mutant casino zombies are funny. You know, they had the comment that, will this hurt more than an ingrown toenail? You know, more like getting a root canal all over your body. I thought some of that dialogue was really funny. And the last page, I really did enjoy seeing Zartan on his swamp skier. Summarizing this issue, this was my favorite of the three. I really am enjoying A Real American Hero right now. Again, you know, does it have its slow spots? Yes. Does it have its good spots? Yes. But overall, it's still very consistent. I'm still really enjoying it. It is still my favorite Skybound G.I. Joe title, and I only have Larry Hama to thank for that. Is it the strongest? I think as part three, where are we going with this? Of the Energon universe, I think the Energon universe is coming on really hard and heavy. It's very exciting. It's very new. It is very now. It is very inspired by Classified. You know, it's, you know, what the G.I. Joe team or G.I. Joe, what Hasbro needs from media for G.I. Joe today. You know, Larry Hama's title is that consistent story going back to 1982 for fans of old, but I see Skybound doing better work trying to market it and bring it to a wider audience. So you do have a more every age friendly book for everybody, because as I said in part two, I think the G.I. Joe, you know, the Duke and the Cobra Commander book are a lot more hardcore, but there's definitely been a notch raised, you know, with the art and stuff on A Real American Hero. I think it's still overall well put together, very consistent, and again, very enjoyable. And the fact that Airtight's in it right now doesn't get any better for me. Now, if you're not an Airtight fan, well, there's still a lot to look forward to. I'm really happy that I am now caught up on comic books. I know, actually, as I'm recording it this week, the final issue of Duke, number 4, is coming out. So that will be next month. That will be April when I will summarize up Cobra Commander 3, Duke 4, leading into what's going on there. But it also means I can get back to doing some vehicle and playset and trailer reviews. I've got a few that I've been taking notes on, a few things that I want to talk about, some things I've been seeing on social media that have inspired me. So I can't wait to get back to that. So thanks for listening to this, the 64th Missile of the Masses. This has been the Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod. You can find the podcast wherever you find podcasts or wherever your favorite podcatcher is. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed what you listen to, or you just want to comment, you know, interacting wherever you listen to, whether it's your podcatcher or Spotify, our host, really helps grow and improve this podcast. If you want more Chaplain's Assistant Mortar Pod, you can find me on social media at Chaplain Joe Pod on X, Facebook, and Instagram, where I do like posting photos mostly and a little bit of what's going on in my life of collecting. And then finally, if you just want to write in, if that's your jam, you got chaplainjoepod@gmail.com. The Chaplains, this is MotorPod, is the strange but not a strange nerdy little brother of the pint, a pop culture podcast. And with all of that out of the way, one final missile for the masses. Be decent to each other. See you out there.